Hi, this is Anne Merchant, and welcome to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council, collectively known as the National Academies. Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? You should all be happy that I didn't try and sing that, but the lyrics will nevertheless be familiar to you. Even though it's now been 40 years since the Beatles, whose two surviving members have both passed that milestone, crooned that question to youthful baby boomers still looking brightly to the future. But given the demographics of today's society, when after all, 50 is the new 30, it might be more appropriate to slot in 74 or 84. But though the song was written primarily as a love song by a 16-year-old Paul McCartney, the questions it poses reflect an uneasiness about aging that would ring as true today as it did in 1967. There was a time when 64 was old, in some cases pretty much as old as you could get. Genghis Khan, born in 1162, just squeaked past the Beatles' deadline, dying at the ripe old age of 65. Both Leonardo da Vinci, who died in 1519, and George Washington, who died in 1799, did a little better, counting out 67 candles on their last birthday cakes. Today, we celebrate age with special magazine editions touting tanned and toned celebrities who are fab and over 40. Retirement living is all the rage, and octogenarians are equally capable of running companies as they are marathons. So it's a bit of a shock when that AARP card turns up in the mail, marking your half century on Earth. And though I've braced myself for its arrival, which should be any day now, I too will likely scoff at the idea that I'm getting anywhere close to anyone's definition of old. While the so-called aging of America has transformed families, reshaped attitudes, significantly increased our professional longevity, and dramatically changed our cultural perceptions of age, it's also become a familiar part of our understanding of today's world. This wholesale change in the nation's demography began several decades ago, and will, by all accounts, continue for many more. By 2030, there'll be about 70 million people in the United States who are older than 64, which will be nearly 22% of the total population. This older population will be quite different from their earlier counterparts. It will be more ethnically and racially diverse, with almost 26% comprised of ethnic minorities. It will be better educated than any in history. And it will be the first cohort to anticipate old age as a normative stage in life. The oldest old, those over 85 years of age, will increase from 4.2 million to 8.9 million by 2030. The range of late life outcomes is already dramatic, and it's likely to become more so. Old age is a very different experience for financially secure or well-educated people than it is for poor or uneducated people. Those who are healthy experience old age very differently from those who are ill. Those who are embedded in strong social networks fare much better than those who find themselves alone. Culture, race, and ethnicity, plus the accumulation of individual life experiences, shape the course of people's later years. Understanding individual and social behavior across the lifespan is key to understanding the diverse outcomes in old age. It's also key to understanding how society can develop the best policies to support longer, healthier lives and to have society benefit from them. The National Research Council recently convened a committee to help the National Institute on Aging develop a long-term research agenda that recognized the coming trends and emphasized promising areas of opportunity that are characterized by recent provocative findings from psychological science, findings that strongly suggest that additional work will lead to new understanding about the health and well-being of older people. Much of this new work will benefit from a lifespan perspective that looks not only at older people, but at people who will become old in the coming decades, recognizing that old age outcomes are the product of cumulative effects of behavioral and social processes that occur throughout adulthood. There's great uncertainty about how societies that are top-heavy with older citizens will function. Will people want to work past the traditional retirement age? Will employers hire them? Will people remain healthy and mentally sharp or suffer from increasing infirmities? Will younger people need to provide care for older people? Or will older people be self-sufficient and socially engaged? The answers to these questions have major implications for society because of the sheer numbers of the boomer generation and the changing distribution of the U.S. population by age and gender. In 1970, the age distribution of the population had the broad base and the small top typical of a rather young population, but with a bulge near the bottom for the baby boomers and above that an indentation for the older birth dearth of the Great Depression. By 2000, the age distribution had narrowed at the base, reflecting the larger number of those in midlife and the smaller number of children and young adults. By 2030, it's projected that the age distribution of the population will be nearly vertical, with similar numbers of people at every age through midlife and much larger numbers of older adults than at any previous time. Also by 2030, it's estimated that there'll be 12.1 million women and 7.4 million men ages 80 or older, more than twice as many in the year 2000. Future generations of older Americans may be healthier or more infirm than today's elderly. They may work longer or retire earlier. They may maintain active engagement in communities or pursue lives of leisure. These alternative scenarios will have enormous influence on the future of aging societies, and behavior is key to all of them. The seeking and timing of preventive health care and people's abilities to start and to sustain healthy regimens in everyday life are crucial. People who maintain nutritious diets lower their risk of certain diseases. People who get regular exercise and who don't smoke experience better outcomes in old age than those who are sedentary and smoke. People who have built strong, lasting social networks are more physically healthy in old age and suffer less cognitive decline than those who haven't. Social and economic resources and opportunities form a context in which one may or may not have the power to make any choice at all. But the most important fact about the nation's older population is, and will continue to be, its heterogeneity. It includes both healthy 75-year-olds who still work and jog every day, and frail 75-year-olds in nursing homes. It includes people living with or close to family and friends with whom they are deeply involved, and people who live alone, far from family and friends. It includes those born into upper-middle-class families in comfortable suburban neighborhoods, whose lives have followed the expected trajectories through school, work, marriage, and family, and those born into poor families in crowded inner cities whose lives have encompassed constant uncertainties and struggles. And it obviously includes men and women of all sexual orientations and of all ethnicities and races, U.S.-born or not. Gender, race, social class, and ethnicity affect opportunities, skills, and liabilities across life, and they significantly relate to old age outcomes. In addition, attitudes, motivations, and dispositions are also major determinants of people's behavior, and thus of their decisions and further experiences. Given the almost limitless possible combination of characteristics and experiences that people can have, it's not surprising that the range of late life outcomes is dramatic. The issue, then, for policymakers, as well as for researchers, is how to bring about behavioral changes that will result in optimal outcomes for the majority of the population. In other words, how do we help people arrive at old age as mentally sharp and physically fit as possible, and with sufficient economic resources to maintain a healthy and happy life? This challenge entails understanding how people initiate and sustain healthy lifestyles, and how social influences affect long-range planning. Another equally important challenge is to help people come to old age motivated and engaged. This challenge depends not only on individuals' social and emotional characteristics and expectations, but also on the beliefs, attitudes, and behavior of employers, family members, and healthcare providers. The field of research on aging may be on the threshold of its most exciting period. Much of the essential descriptive work has been done. The time for major theory building is ripe, as is the time to apply basic research findings to solve social problems. Aging may be a journey driven in part by biology, but the tremendous variability in aging, even in identical twins, makes it clear that environmental influences, mediated by emotion, cognition, and behavior, significantly affect its course. The Committee on Aging Frontiers in Social Psychology, Personality, and Adult Developmental Psychology was chaired by Laura L. Karstensen from Stanford University's Department of Psychology. For more information on When I'm 64, you may contact the Board on Behavioral, Cognitive, and Sensory Sciences at area code 202-334-2388. You may also read the full text of this report online at the National Academies Press. My name is Anne Merchant, and you've been listening to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academies, advisors to the nation on science, engineering, and medicine. Be sure to visit us at our website at nationalacademies.org, where we have more than 3,000 books and publications available full text to read free online.